The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Dick, what's the plan at safety? Is that Marx's job to lose?
I'm going to be like Fauci and just take the Fifth Amendment out of questions. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What was the question?
Do you think your team's going to win the Super Bowl this year, Coach?
I'm going to be like Fauci and just take the Fifth Amendment out of questions.
Okay, I understand you wouldn't want to say if you're going to win a Super Bowl or not. That can certainly backfire. Okay, well, is the defense going to be like much better or no? What do you think?
I'm going to be like Fauci and just take the Fifth Amendment out of questions.
Why'd he come on the show? This feels too. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Hey, Vic, do you think you guys overpaid for Jalen Carter, or was that the right move?
I'm going to be like Fauci and just take the Fifth Amendment out of questions.
What? Why is he doing that?
I don't know.
Coach, obviously you paid Bond last year, you paid Carter, you paid Davis. Are you able to pay Coupe DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell? Like, those are your cornerstones on the back end.
I'm going to be like Fauci and just take the Fifth Amendment out of question.
I really thought because you're Italian, he was going to show you a little bit of respect. Let's go.
Coach, what do you think about the reports we hear that you guys are really heating people up in camp this year? You're going to try to really bring more blitzes, more multiple looks here as far as defense goes for you.
I'm going to be like Fauci and just take the Fifth Amendment out of question.
AJ.
Oh, man.
What is that?
I'm going to be like Fauci and just take the Fifth Amendment out of questions.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow. I don't know how you just walk in there and do that. I don't know how that is. But it is crazy. I guess everybody can kind of just do that now.
Yeah.
That's in there from my understanding.
Yeah, that's right.
Do I think that he should be embarrassed for the self-adulation that he engaged in? You right, I do. Because some of the things that he was telling us to do was inconsistent with science, but he was telling us it was science that led to him making the decisions that he made. Masking, 6 feet distancing, the closing of businesses, forcing businesses to push those mandates upon people like me and others. Because I took the vaccine, and I took a booster, and I wore a mask. And we were told, hey, you ain't gonna get COVID if you do that. And I got COVID.
I had done exactly what Dr. Anthony Fauci was imploring us all to do.
Can you tell us about the mindset of coming into your last season? Like, that's a real thing, it feels like, because is everything better? Is everything funner? Is everything more awesome? Like, how do you kind of view this year versus maybe the years of the past?
I'm going to plead the Fifth.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, gotta love that guy.
Okay.
Like that absolute coward, Tony Fauci. Absolute coward.
Yeah. Hey, it's back, baby.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. 111.
You got a pardon, and you're in front, and you pleaded over 100 times.
Yeah.
At the White House. What are you scared of, Tony?
Yeah.
I thought you were the science.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am science, and you get up there and you can't answer a question.
Yeah.
That's what are we doing? Baby.
And how much time did the network spend on that? How much time did they spend on my response? Every week on my vaccination status, on Taylor and Travis's wedding.
Yeah!
Did they do even a minute on Tony Fauci?
No, I don't think I've heard anything.
I bet they didn't. You can't talk about the COVID stuff because obviously it was made, you know, in a lab in China. That's like not even questionable anymore. Tony Fauci is an absolute criminal. I'm on good terms with my family. I'm on good terms with my family. What are you going to say now? Yeah. What are you going to say now?
I want to let you know. It's been a fun ride for you.
It's been a great, great life and a great career.
You have a lot of teammates that are vaccinated. That's good heading into the season.
A lot of people had probably fake vac cards back in the day, too. It was like written in crayon. I'm like, all right, so we're going to pass that off, but we're going to be second-rate citizens over here. I got to wear a yellow armband, train in the back. Can't be around more than three people. Oh, you know, you got to wear a mask when you do your interview, and all of us are going to be masked up the entire time back here. We're 20 feet away from you because that's safety first.
And I watched Dr. Fauci on Capitol Hill yesterday, and the person I thought about most was Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving stood out in my mind because of the heat that he was taking. And now folks were piling on because that was just the latest transgression in their eyes that he was committing and subjecting the public to. He refused the vaccine. New York City's mandate made him ineligible for home games. And he linked his stance to people losing jobs over vaccine mandates. In my opinion, particularly hindsight-wise, it didn't make him stubborn. or selfish. It made him brave. His willingness to stand up and say, nah, I'm not doing that. It's just a time for reflection to look at things differently.
The tide is turning against the experts. Finally, look what it takes to finally get, as Stephen A. Smith says there, look what it takes to finally get people to reflect on what just happened. The most chaotic upheaval of society in 100 years, more. And it was everybody just knelt before the experts, knelt before all of the Faucis. And now we see their credibility is absolutely destroyed. We see the diary. We see the journals. Fauci's got his phone taken by the Senate investigators. But then there, and I've got quite a few points to make from that opening montage, and that's from ESPN. We'll talk about ESPN and the way they reacted to COVID 5-6 years ago. But you know, there's a bit of accountability finally, and people are laughing about it. You hear the fans there supporting Aaron Rodgers and everybody basically saying, well, Aaron Rodgers was right. Kyrie Irving was right. And I just want to mention, I mean, you go back to the Trumpet Daily programs and the Key of David programs right when lockdown started, and the Trumpet Daily was right. The Key of David was right. The Trumpet was right. Well before any of those guys, by the way, and you listen to some of the advice and the directives that they'll give people, and they're crazy in all these other areas too. Finally, they're skeptical. Stephen A. Smith there talking about reflecting. Well, Kyrie Irving was right. And it seems like he's got a little bit of remorse because he talks about the network piling on Kyrie Irving. Stephen A. Smith piled on Kyrie Irving for not taking the jab. I mean, these people are just, it's like they've just blotted out this history in their own minds. You can see how Satan just, he undermines everything. I mean, rightly so, people should be skeptical of the experts and man's government. But then it turns to, well, let's do it my way. I can only trust myself. And you see how society just unravels here. The only solution, as we say so often on this show, is repentance toward God. It's turning to God, trusting Him for the solution. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. Thank you for joining us this Thursday morning. I'm Sam Livingston, your host for today's show. Any feedback, you can send td@thetrumpet.com. You can subscribe at Rumble or our Rumble channel or our YouTube channel. You can watch the show on demand at thetrumpet.com anytime you like. Like I mentioned, at least Stephen A. Smith is sort of admitting that he's wrong. People are reflecting on the system that they basically just, again, bowed down to for so many years. Aaron Rodgers, he rightly points out, you know, when it was what he was doing, not wearing a mask or not taking the jab, that's all ESPN could cover. And then you see that opening montage there, and those are ESPN shows. I think Stephen A. Smith has a couple shows, but one of them is an ESPN show. The logo's in the bottom right corner. And they're there mocking the vaccine mandates, mocking Fauci, all stuff that, again, Sage Steele, if you remember that story, we covered it when it happened. She was a host at ESPN for 15, 16 years. She was fired effectively for speaking out against the vaccine mandates. And now ESPN, well, they're not going to come out and say they were wrong for any of that. Now they really don't want to talk about COVID. They really don't want to talk about vaccine mandates. Well, just let them have their spiel, and we're gonna forget how we responded to all of that. Again, they just passed the guilt. Well, it was a collective body. We were all wrong, so there's no accountability, and we just move on. Newsweek, this is from October 14, 2021. Everything Stephen A. Smith has said about Kyrie Irving's stance on the COVID vaccine. And there, he's at the end of that montage saying, you know, I've been thinking a lot about Kyrie and how we piled on him. And you look at these quotes and you go back through those programs from 2021, and it was Stephen A. Smith piling on Kyrie Irving. Trade him. If he ain't going to take the vaccine and can't play half your home games, trade him. You know, be a team player, Kyrie. Take the jab for the team. That's what we're all told. This is how you love your neighbor. This is how you save the country. Take the jab. Eventually, KD has to realize that Kyrie's vaccination status is impacting basketball, and basketball is all KD cares about. Ask him to be traded. He called Irving's stance on the vaccine flat out stupid. I've been covering the NBA now for almost 25 years. This is some of the stupidest nonsense I've ever seen. Just flat out stupid what Kyrie Irving is doing, refusing to take the vaccine. And it's amazing how at the time that Stephen A. Smith took the jab, I think he said three times, because Fauci said it, keep taking the booster, he got COVID. And then I don't think it was in the montage, but he talks about his time in the hospital after getting the vaccine. Because remember, well, if you get the vaccine, you're not going to get COVID. Well, that failed in like 2 days. Okay, well, you can still get COVID, but it's not going to be as bad. Okay, well, that failed in 2 days because now people are still being hospitalized after taking the vaccine. Stephen A. Smith is one of them. They basically said you're on your deathbed for 3 or 4 hours. After, like, I think he said it was the double or the triple booster. So it wasn't helping him, but he doesn't, you know, run back to ESPN, to his show over there, and tell him, this is what I went through. Fauci was wrong. I'm going to come out and I'm going to take a bold stance and say that in 2021. He's 2026. Everybody's doing it now. The rest of the ESPN shows, it's okay. Your job is safe and secure. I mean, who will put something on the line to tell you the truth? I mean, we were doing it on this show, I mean, at the expense of reaching our audience. YouTube just started outright removing our shows to the point where it's flagged, and we were one flag away from having the entire channel just completely deleted. Because the truth is the truth. You're just going to be selective about when you say it. I mean, there's a whole list here of what they said about Kyrie Irving. You could do hours-long programs about Novak Djokovic, Novaks, and the bans that he went through. And these guys were, I mean, now they're totally vindicated. But like I said, just go back to this show. Go back to the COVID shows, the lockdown shows in spring, summer of 2020. This is Fox News. Fauci held in contempt as COVID cell phone lands in hands of Senate investigators. Senate Republicans moved to hold Dr. Anthony Fauci in contempt of Congress in their pursuit of forcing the former architect of the nation's COVID-19 response to go on record about his actions leading up to and during the pandemic. This all gets pretty interesting legally because Fauci was pardoned. As Roger said there, you're pardoned. What are you so worried about? You're the one that said, well, I'll speak before Congress. I respect the institution, and I have to be transparent with the American people. And Mr. Transparency, I mean, it'd be great if one day Obama could sit before a panel like that. Mr. Transparency, 111 times, I plead the fifth over and over again. And why? Because he knows if he speaks, he's going to perjure himself. And he's got a clear track ahead of him because of the pardon. But, I mean, it's really fascinating. I don't have time to get into all the details about it. But because he's not being accused of a crime, he can't plead the fifth. So in essence, as Rand Paul, the case that he's making, well, he's obstructing a congressional investigation. And by the precedent set by Democrats obstructing Congress, that really should be the death penalty. When you go back and look at Peter Navarro and Steve Bannon and maybe Roger Stone, some of these others, if you obstruct Congress, life in prison. And they followed through on it. They put these guys in prison. for obstructing Congress. I mean, that was the charge against a lot of the January 6 tourists. Obstruction of Congress. Typically, once a contempt resolution passes by committee, it heads to the Senate floor for a full vote. However, Paul's resolution allows that step to be skipped altogether and allows him to send the referral directly to the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia. Curious to see what happens. Most of the time, it seems like nothing happens. But it is, they kind of put Fauci in this catch-22 position where if he speaks, you know he's going to lie. And now if he's quiet, well, you're obstructing an investigation. We'll see if President Trump's DOJ has the backbone to do anything there. Wall Street Journal Senate panel says it has obtained copy of Fauci's COVID-era phone. So there's probably going to be even more that we learn about, probably a lot more media gushing. Like I said earlier last week, I mean, it's like he wasn't even doing his regular job all through the worst pandemic in the history of mankind. He was more concerned about hanging out with Jake Tapper, getting text messages from Dana Bash, as RFK pointed out in that interview. I mean, if Republicans took that approach, you can bet if it was a Democrat White House and Democrat House, they'd be arrested for that. You see these people being exposed. You see the media, though, I mean, time and time again, like just that RFK interview with Dana Bash. The media are the biggest fools of them all, and they're not fools. I mean, they're complicit. I'll read some quotes in a minute from America Under Attack. I mean, this, if you're just a bare minimum skeptical of what they're telling you, well, that's your role as the media. Ask some harder questions. There was the clip, I don't know if we played it on the show, but it's hard to go back and review all of the absolute insanity of 2020 and 2021. But there was the clip where Fauci and Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., they're walking around through these minority neighborhoods to try to get people to take the vaccine. And Fauci's talking to this one guy, and he says, I'm not going to take this thing that you just pushed out on us. How do I know it's safe? And Fauci just says, well, we've been working on this technology for 20 years. And it's just this, he's a propagandist. And the guy just says, well, what do you mean you've been working on it? Has it been tested on human beings? Well, if you read the reports, and again, this is years ago, not 2026, you read these reports that Pfizer and these other companies want blotted out. When you get them, they're almost totally redacted, and you've got to go through all these procedures. It takes years to just get the black lines taken off, and then you learn, well, these were the effects that it had on lab rats, and we didn't have time to test it on humans. It was only tested on rats. So effectively, all of you are going to be our guinea pigs for this vaccine, but we've been working on it for 20 years. So they're just trained propagandists going around. And you would think, we don't have thousands of journalists here. We don't have investigators that go around and do this work. CNN does, the New York Times does. And they just swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. And then persecuted you for not believing it. This is America Under Attack. I mean, you just command search the word complicit in that book. And it talks about how the media, it wasn't just that they were irresponsible and not doing their duty. It's that they were part of the problem. Most of this stuff couldn't happen without the media pushing it. This is America Under Attack. Virtually all of America's top media organizations and personalities were complicit. This is talking about, I mean, it's referring to several scandals here, as well as the powerful tech companies and many of the nation's top politicians. Later, another scandal. This explosive information further exposed the treason committed by top Democrats, yet the mainstream press ignored it. That is shameful complicity with these crimes that are destroying our constitutional republic. another example. Shamefully, the media were almost completely silent about this story. Why aren't they interested? Could anything be more important? This is about losing our country. This is about going from great freedom to the worst kind of tyranny. But in far too many cases, these newsmakers are complicit. They're not fools. They're not being played. They're part of the regime. They're part of the attack. I'll go through this story at the end of this program about this Cambridge professor. And he's just lying and lying and lying. I mean, it's almost like a high school prank. This guy is like, well, I'm just going to see how far up the DEI line I can work. And just makes, it's crazy. I'll get to it at the end, the stuff that he would make up. And basically just says, well, I just expected them to believe it. And the Cambridge professors, because he checks off all these DEI boxes, just gushed over him. And he's the youngest black professor to ever work at Cambridge. And he's on all these interviews. And he's a superstar, a superhero. And you read the story and you're like, well, are you mad at the professor? Or are you mad at all of these people who couldn't be bothered to do the bare minimum of research into this guy that they gave a PhD? Or they just knew and they didn't care? I mean, our institutions are absolutely crumbling. It's a joke. I mean, along that same vein, there's this story, you go back to COVID era. You remember the late night comedians, the clowns of COVID? Stephen Colbert, he dressed up wearing a syringe and had all the dancers doing the vax scene. It was embarrassing. So his show, he's on CBS, he's getting canceled, that's going to be done. There's a story today that his daughter is resigning from her position at CBS. She works for 60 Minutes. So they're all just constant. It's like this all the time. They're all just tied together. I mean, I won't get into the story that much, but I was just surprised at seeing that headline that, oh, well, I shouldn't be surprised at that. They all get jobs from one another. It's all self-interest. They're all trying to preserve their own career. So toe the line. Say what Fauci tells you to say. Trust the science. 60 or CBS, they're run by Barry Weiss now, so a lot of these hardcore radicals are getting pushed out in the line of just talking about the rise of these radicals. There's a radical Islamist who won the Democrat primary in Michigan, so he's going to be the Democrat Party nominee for the Senate race there in November, so he's going to run up against a Republican. They're saying it's a pretty tight race between the Democrat and the Republican. But even just in this Democrat primary, you know, the establishment wanted this other figure. But here comes the radical Islamist, the Jew hater, the Muslim Brotherhood. Well, I'll get to that story in just a minute. But he wins. Not as comfortably as they were saying he was going to win. But he's going to be running. And this is inevitable. Once, what's her, Tlaib? And the Somali, I can't believe I can't remember her name, the one that has $30 million now, who rose from, you know who I'm talking about. At any rate, so once they started getting in at these low-level House seats, it's inevitable that it's going to be the Senate. And as Miranda Devine points out, you know, once it's there, you know, what's keeping them from the White House? Abdul El-Sayed is Democrat Senate nominee in Michigan. A seismic victory for progressives. I don't know why anybody calls them progressives. That carries massive implications for both the Senate battle map and the Democratic Party's future. Miranda Devine says, if El-Sayed can pull off a victory in November in the Midwest in the swingiest of swing states, what will stop a Marxist heading for the White House? Here's a clip from Ted Cruz. He's talking to a counterterrorism expert again at a hearing, and he asks them about this individual who, again, these people just seemingly rise from nowhere, and then you learn about all of the connections that they have. And this one, I mean, he's got connections to the Muslim Brotherhood. This is clip 5.
Do you believe that there is a Muslim Brotherhood branch operating in the United States?
Yes.
Does Abdul El-Sayed's candidacy for senator in Michigan concern you?
Yes, sir, it does.
Why is that?
Well, to begin with, I look at the connections that his father-in-law, Chukwuka Taib, has to Brotherhood-linked groups. This includes being the president at one time of CARE Michigan, also his presence on the Islamic Society of North America Founders Committee, which is only for those most exclusively devoted to ISNA and provides significant amounts of funding. There are other known Brotherhood members on that committee. I would also look at El Sayed's ties to a group called M-Gage, which purports to be a Muslim sort of get out the vote or candidate recruitment organization, but it has close ties to CARE. It was created by a former CARE member who at one time was on a terror watch list and was also a consultant to convicted terrorist Samuel Arian.
Happening. If you go back, it's not even that long ago, 9/11, 25 years. How different this country is. I mean, these is essentially, this is pro-Hamas politicians winning elections in the United States. Mamdani in New York City, same thing. His wife, and she celebrated 9/11, celebrated October 7. I mean, we let Islamic terror groups essentially take power. As one commentator was making a point about England, and applies to America too, that I mean, we're losing a war to these conquerors, and they don't have to fire a shot. We invite them in because Mamdani just gets up there and smiles and says, if you disagree with me, you're Islamophobic. And everybody just, I don't want them to call me a bad name. Just America is so weak. It's so divided. And you can't look at these problems and say, well, we just got to get back to the good old days and everything will be solved. You know, the 80s were great. Mr. Armstrong was warning in the 80s, and it's this slippery slope. It's been building for decades. It's not just about winning elections. How is our country so divided? How are people so weak? You look at the Bible, and sin is what causes weakness. No one will stand up to them. You look at, again, over in Europe, just switching gears here a bit. On this, Europe's dealing with the rise in radical Islam. It's pretty routine now that there's a car ramming of some sort or some sort of Islamic terror attack. Just yesterday, there was a drone with explosives attached to it that landed at an airport in Leipzig or tried to attack planes in Leipzig. And these were Ukrainian supply planes, and you look at a map and you think, well, how if these drones would originate from Russia, I mean, you have to look at the nations that they'd be flying over. I don't even know if that's in the range that they can even operate in. So if they're coming and they have explosives on them, well, they're probably being smuggled in, coming through Poland or the Czech Republic. They're in trucks. I mean, you've just got bombs and guns and all of these things being funneled around through Europe. And all of these crises mounting in Europe, then it's all about to spill over. Here's a report on this. I don't even know if it's considered a thwarted drone attack. I don't remember if they just didn't detonate or if the German authorities were able to stop it. At any rate, here's a brief report on that, clip 16.
Tonight, a major security scare at a busy German airport, where officials say they discovered a drone packed with explosives near this Ukrainian cargo jet in a potential plot to sabotage the aircraft. A bomb squad carefully combing the scene. German police now analysing these images, which they say show a drone fitted with an explosive device and detonator found at the Leipzig airport Tuesday night. Authorities immediately closing down all runways, deploying a bomb-disposing robot to disable the drone, which was located in a cargo area separate from the passenger terminal. Moments later, police say a DHL cargo plane struck a second unidentified object near that same airport after aborting its landing amid the security scare. The DHL aircraft aircraft sustaining minor damage. That incident now also being investigated. Leipzig Airport is a crucial cargo hub in eastern Germany, used by the US and other NATO allies to supply Ukraine with military equipment. American officials say the airport has been the target of multiple suspected Russian sabotage operations. At least 18 drone incidents have disrupted air traffic there since January. Tonight, German authorities say this incident represents a new threat scenario and involves a high level of technical expertise.
And all it takes is one of those to successfully detonate. I mean, can you imagine a plane like that being downed over Germany and it was a Russian drone? I mean, who knows? I mean, we're in this time of rumors of wars. Maybe it just fell out of one of the Ukrainian cargo planes. Who knows? But the Russians, they're provoking. And Germany there, I mean, you see these, I think it was, well, in 2014 when Russia downed that Ukrainian commercial flight. I mean, imagine one of those planes crashing in Germany because of a Russian drone. And Germany's got every excuse to rearm at the moment. A lot of them, they engineer so that it just makes them look as innocent as possible. The Ukraine war gives Germany an excuse to rearm. The war with Iran gives it an excuse to rearm. Its struggling economy gives it an excuse to rearm. The rise of the far right, the rise of Islamic terrorism, and all of these things just building, and it could take something as simple as one of those drones going off. And it's World War III. This is what, again, Mr. Armstrong warned about for nearly a century. They're going back now nearly a century. It's what Mr. Fleury warns about. That's what the trumpet was mocked for so much. And now you've got commentators basically saying, you know, this is World War III is coming. It's building up. You could have, it's a seething pot. And nations are about to boil over. And the one that you have to watch most of all is Germany. New York Times, wars, wildfires, migrants leave Europe straining for control. Mr. Fleury talked about the immigrants coming across the border from Morocco into Ceuta in Spain. And just what a problem that causes. But then all these other nations in Europe reacting with, get rid of the Schengen zone. There shouldn't be any free travel between these nations, because once they get into this little exclave of Spain, now they can get on a boat and they can come to Italy. They can come to Germany or wherever. And they're talking about, well, we need to pare this down. We need to just be run by this elite group of nations that can act quickly. And it's probably going to involve a few top leaders, and then there's going to be one main leader over the top of it so that decisions can be made quickly. And it all sounds so flattering, and it all sounds like the right thing to do in response to these events that are just totally out of Germany's control. Don't be fooled by that, though. Remember what Mr. Armstrong said. Remember what Mr. Fleury says. Look at Germany. Look at this world on edge. And man, you know, there's this religious revival. And people are going to look at Aaron Rodgers, or they're going to look at Djokovic and think, oh, well, these were the guys that were right. Or, you know, this is, I'm back to religion and I'm doing what's right in my own eyes, essentially, is what it gets down to. As we point out on this show, we've got to do what is right as God defines it. Count the cost. Build God's way. Just coming out of the summer educational program that ended on Sunday this week, and then we're just a few days away from Armstrong College starting up. We talk a lot about true education, how to solve problems in your own life and in the world. You look at these stories, I mean, this just ties right back to the beginning, where you look at these experts or you look at academia and these institutions that are just, you know, worshipped and praised as the final authority on what is right and wrong. And Cambridge is right up there as one of them. And this story where they hire this professor, quote unquote, they hire this individual who checks off all the DEI boxes. And that's where you get education from in man's crazy world. Listen to some of these clips. This is a BBC report 3 years ago talking about this professor, Jason Arde, and they love him. They can't get enough of Professor Arde. And so I'll go through some of his resume. Mr. Palmer wrote about it yesterday in the morning brief and has an article about it at thetrumpet.com. And it's one of these stories where you roll your eyes and laugh, and then you get into it a bit more and just think, like, this is the institutional rot that's happening everywhere. You can't put your trust in man's systems. This is, again, these clips are from the BBC, and then I think there's another one from The Telegraph. We're just reporting on this young man's rise to academic stardom. This is clip one.
I always felt it was a privilege to have a period of 11 years where I couldn't speak and I couldn't converse in a way that everyone else could, because it allowed me to see things in a different way.
Professor Jason Arde was diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder at the age of 3. He couldn't speak until he was 11 and read or write until he was 18. Throughout his early years, his parents continued to believe in him. Sandro would spend hours of his free time teaching Jason.
There's one thing you said to me which I never forgot, and it was when I was 22, and I said to you I was thinking about doing a PhD, and you said to me, like, you know, it would be the greatest story in the world if the kid who didn't know how to read and write was managed to get a PhD, and you said, like, I think, you know, we can take on the world, or you can take on the world and you can win, and I never forgot that.
And now Jason is days away from achieving another ambition.
Hi. So good to see you.
Here's his new boss at Cambridge.
We do have a lot of work to do, but I feel really optimistic.
Part of his research will look at new ways to make higher education more accessible for everyone.
What can we do to ensure that this isn't a market appointment in 5 years' time? How can this become the norm?
We've listened to the voices of our Black scholars and our Black students. And some of it has not been easy to hear, to be honest, but we're able to face up to some of the structural issues that people face. The board of electors on your interview day were absolutely unanimous. We are so lucky to have you. You are the best in the world in terms of the research that you do.
An extraordinary journey, but for Jason, this is not an end. It's a beginning.
The reaction has been amazing, and I'm truly grateful to everyone for their kind sentiment and kind words. We've got a lot of work to do.
At 22, I remember asking my lecturer, she'd just got her PhD, and I said to her, what's a PhD? Mm. And she said, it means I'm a doctor, and it's something you won't have to worry about because you're just about doing okay here.
Right.
I didn't take any offence to that. I thought, she's right.
Yeah.
But I thought, that's going to be an aspiration. So I went back home that night and I spoke to Sandro, and I said to Sandro, have you heard of this thing called a PhD? And Sandro's like, yeah, it's it means you're a doctor, you end up becoming a doctor, you know, not one that can save people's lives, but sure, a doctor nonetheless. So I said, oh, okay. I said, I think I want to do one.
Why did you think you want to do that?
I did stay, James. I couldn't tell you why.
Okay.
I just remember thinking I want to do one. And by the way, I have no obsession with titles.
Sure.
On my bank cards, I've not even changed. I'm still Mr.
Yeah.
So it's not even necessarily aligned with titles. I don't know why. I just remember thinking I wanted to do one. And he burst out laughing. And I was like, well, what are you laughing at? What's so ridiculous? And when he composed himself and he'd kind of become more sober in his thought, he said, you know what would be more ridiculous than you being at uni now? You getting a PhD within 11 years of learning to read and write.
I mean, it sounds like they're just setting this up as some sort of prank. It's like a lot of these guys in high school that joined the women's track team. Well, they're not going to tell me no. Let's go do it. and we'll be state champions. I mean, how much money has this guy made being a professor? And part of me doesn't, if the system's going to just pat him on the back and carry him up the line, why not? It's not so much him. I mean, he's an absolute liar, and I'll cover that in just a minute. But it's the professors in that BBC video that said, you're the greatest thing that's ever happened to Cambridge. And just walking him up. I mean, clearly he is lying. It's like the start of COVID. I mean, these things, they're clearly wrong. He was not able to read or write or speak really until the age of 12. He says that he at one point ran 30 marathons in 35 days. And in one of the marathons, he broke his leg, but managed to keep running and did marathons the day after that. Like I said, it sounds like it's a prank. Where he just, what crazy things can I say? He was featured on a TV show from the 1960s about seven-year-olds, even though he was born in 1985. He is accused of plagiarizing his doctoral thesis. Surprise, surprise. And all of this reminds me so much of Obama. Obama had his emotional truths where he'd make up these stories and then he's awarded the Nobel Peace Prize before doing anything because all the wokies are just itching to do whatever they can to make amends for their racist past or whatever it is, whatever makes them feel righteous. Anyway, I've got a whole page that Mr. Palmer went through of these lies that he just came up with and said, easy to disprove, other people are doing it. And the most alarming part is that one journalist, I think for the Telegraph, looked into it, said, this guy's a PhD. You know, that's an interesting story. Let's look into that a little bit more. And they actually, the Metropolitan Police open up an investigation, not into the fake professor, into the journalist attempting to expose the story because the journalist was harassing him. Now, I don't think that it went too far. Essentially, it resolved or ended in the police saying, hey, look, we know you're a journalist. We are investigating you. Just so you know, we're not going to do anything. You were investigating me? Well, yeah, because if you try to get the truth or you try to expose an academic, a DEI academic, well, you're a racist. Again, the broader point I want to make here is that this is Cambridge University. These are the experts, just going right back to the beginning, that are so quick to tell you you're a buffoon, you're a fool for not getting a vaccine, you're a murderer. And by the way, Professor Ardade has decided that you are also a racist. To me, I just look at, again, like I said, well, how much money did he make being a professor there? And then Cambridge is doubling down, basically saying, we're sorry to see what's happened to Professor Ardade. We stand by him. And then Professor Ardade writes a resignation letter, and all of these people are just taking it and running it through AI fact checkers, and every one of them says 100% written by AI. So he's not even writing his resignation letter. And then his excuse for that is, well, you know, why does it matter? If I've learned how to use this tool, so be it. Here's a clip from GB News just talking about, again, some more of the outrageous claims that this man has made. Clip 9.
Well, I mean, this chap should be a superhero. So accomplished is he, not just with brains, but with brawn as well, in addition to his a fantastical academic career. This is a man who allegedly ran 600 miles in 6 days, which would put him in the elite tier of athletes, at the same time, of course, as raising £5 million, he said, running 30 marathons in 35 days. He later had to concede that this was actually he was part of a syndicate, but mysteriously he had signed a non-disclosure agreement with everybody else taking part, so he couldn't find out who these other people were. He claimed to have been part of a famous television show for which the basic requirement was to have been born 20 years before he was actually born as well. claimed to be a professional footballer as well, claimed to have been sent a pig's head and been at the receiving end of terrible racism. Yet when the police were asked, they had no record of this, although he said he went to the police. I mean, an absolutely remarkable. I mean, it was absolutely inevitable that we would get to this point. The claims were so remarkable, so easy to debunk. He claimed he was a visiting professor at Durham University, at Glasgow University, at Ohio State University. All three denied this was the case. It's astounding that nobody bothered to check until now.
You've got Mr. Juicy Smollett. It's Bubba Wallace. I mean, it's all over the place. And they should be condemned and held accountable for lying and for being frauds. But right back to what we talked about at the beginning, what were the experts doing? How does this happen without a complicit media? How do those guys feel emboldened to lie that way when they know they're going to get away with it? They know that the guards and the fact checkers, they love them, and they won't tell them they're wrong because they don't want to be Islamophobic. They don't want to be called a racist. So you can lie. You can do whatever you want. This is the expert class. This is more condemning of the experts and the institutions than it is of the individuals that, in a way, are just exposing them inadvertently. That individual goes on in that last clip to talk about how this is more of a crisis for Cambridge than it is for Professor Arday, clip 10.
Well, it's a major crisis for Cambridge University, but I would say more broadly, because they have put aside the pursuit for the truth. They saw somebody who was their poster boy for progressive politics, somebody who ticked all the boxes: race, neurodivergent, poverty, grew up illiterate, unorthodox childhood. They had too much invested in him. And so you had leading figures in academia, in the media, people like James O'Brien, Krishnan Gurumurthy, Zach Polanski, Labour MPs, all rushed without thinking to circle the wagons around their golden child, whereas everybody else could see quite clearly the emperor has no clothes.
And this is not, as he goes on to point out, this isn't just Cambridge. I think it was 2 years ago, the head of Harvard, she got taken down in a pretty obvious plagiarism scandal. I think there was some other judge where the same thing happened. This is just continuing from that interview, clip 11.
But the real question is, how many other Jason Ardays are out there? He got caught because he was so bold. His claims were so remarkable. But there must be other people, doctors, lawyers, academics, particularly in areas like critical race theory, a Mickey Mouse course with Mickey Mouse professors and Mickey Mouse...
You know, they say that not all heroes wear capes, but a lot of them do wear academic gowns. And I'm just trying to keep up with Professor Jason Arday, who is genuinely my hero. I think he's someone. No, he really is. I mean, he is just...
I mean, you can do anything, right? I mean, yeah. He's such an inspiration.
Yeah.
You can come from whatever background you like, but with, you know, a bit of gut, a bit of guile,
yes,
you too can make up the most fantastical backstory possible and live your dreams every day.
I mean, you know, in times past, you wanted to be the caveman with the biggest club, or then you wanted to be the guy who sailed to the Americas and found the gold. Now, the top position in our society, unquestionably... obviously, is like head of the sociology of education at Cambridge, right? And he's made it there. He became the youngest ever black professor at Cambridge, which is a serious achievement, especially considering his background, right? Son of Ghanaian-born parents, he had autism as a child. He was nonverbal until 11, right? Professor of education, couldn't speak till 11.
Yeah.
Could not read or write until he was 18.
God, they should have gone on Cambridge courses, teachers.
But he would not let not being able to read or write hold him back from reading or writing.
I mean, there's just no merit to it. I mean, on one hand, it could be a very inspiring story about how he pushed through those difficulties But then when it's just completely fabricated and is fantasy world, and the experts and the elites and academia just lie right to your face, gross negligence, which is lying, these guys become authorities. And he kind of put the university in a point where he said, well, I want to teach about racism in higher education. So if you don't hire me, that makes you a racist. So I guess anybody could just roll up and ask for a job. One more clip from the Telegraph. This is clip 15.
Now, Cambridge University has previously said that allegations of plagiarism have been thoroughly investigated by the relevant institution and the journals in question, and have said that Professor Arday has been cleared by these investigations of any wrongdoing. And Liverpool John Moores University said in 2025 that, yes, it has received allegations of academic misconduct against Arday, but a confidential procedure was conducted in response to these allegations, and Professor Arday's PhD still stands. We will not comment further on a private matter between the university and a former student. And this is the interesting thing, isn't it? Part of this story, there are so many elements to it.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack.
There's a lot to unpack.
Colourful life.
But let's start with the fact that actually the universities involved are standing by him.
They are. And the publishers are standing by him.
No shame. It's just like all the other media institutions. No shame about what happened during COVID. We were right. You know, let them have fun, you know, talking about it now. We're not going to penalize Aaron Rodgers for getting on an ESPN show and doing that. Let them talk about it, but we're never going to change. We're never going to do anything differently. We're the experts. We're right. You see just how stubborn mankind is, and why it takes so much from God to finally break through. The Spectator writes, the Jason Arday debacle is becoming a national scandal. And they talk about how this isn't so much about him as much as it is about our prestigious universities. Mr. Palmer at the Trumpet quotes an article from Mr. Flurry back in 2016 titled The Deadly Path of Higher Education. And Mr. Flurry writes, the truth does not matter to these people. The fact resurfaces again and again in these stories. They don't care about the truth. They want to destroy the truth. That is very telling as to the real nature of this movement and the evil spirit behind it. There is something dreadfully wrong with the knowledge taught in these schools. Look at the fruits. We have so much of it, and it isn't helping us. The problems in America's universities today are powerful proof that this educational system was built on the wrong foundation. The knowledge it teaches is based on the wrong premise. I think he was writing that in response to that scandal. Maybe it was a Duke or one of those Northeastern universities, another prestigious university, maybe it was Columbia, where, again, it was all these famous actors, you just paid a little bit extra to have their kids accepted because you want the label. You want the tag. You want to be able to say you went to Harvard or Cambridge. You look at our nations, and it's a joke. You look at the United States and Britain, and it's a joke. It's sad to look at the greatest empire in man's history, the blessings of Abraham, and it's a laughingstock. And like we say on the show all the time, if you're not building God's way, if you're not turning to God, well, it is going to amount to nothing. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 37 talks about these curses that are going to befall our nations. It says, and you shall become an astonishment, a proverb and a byword among all nations where the Lord shall lead you. A proverb and a byword. Mr. Flurry said, this was in a Trumpet Daily, again during the COVID years. He said, instead of being a positive example, instead of being an example nation of what happens when you obey God, this verse is essentially saying that you're going to be an embarrassment. You're going to be a nation that others look at and ridicule and mock and laugh at, laugh to scorn. There are a lot of nations laughing. Again, this isn't the end of the story, thankfully, but there is a lot of pain and suffering on the way to waking up to seeing what God is doing. I mean, all of these events, as we say on the Key of David and in the Trumpet magazine, it leads to the return of Christ. There's painful days ahead, but it does ultimately lead to tremendous hope. Well, that is all that I have time for on today's show. Thank you so much for joining us on the Trumpet Daily. If you have any comments, feedback, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. Mr. Stephen Fleury should be with you on tomorrow's show. Thanks again, and we'll see you tomorrow.